Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and authors you love who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. I want to first thank those joining us here on the radio side of our program at 92.3 FM. We also welcome those tuning in through DCNowRadio.com, as well as through BlogTalkRadio.com, either through our switchboard, our live chat, or even joining us through our podcast. We're glad to have all of you with us. Have a great conversation coming up with you this afternoon. I've been looking forward to this because of his brand new book, Leaning Into Sharp Points. Dr. Stan Goldberg is back to talk to us not only about his own journey, but how he has been able to help all of us to be able to cope with the ups and downs of life, as well as what it takes to care for someone, whether it's a relative or a good friend of ours, in what could be their final days. Stan, welcome back to Conversations. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you for having me, Cyrus.
Well, Stan, as you and I were talking before we went live here, this is actually your second time on the program. I first had the privilege a couple of years ago to speak with you about your book, Lessons for the Living, a very powerful book that I still remember some of those tidbits we discussed from that point. Talk to us about what this journey as a writer has been like for you, Stan, because you have been able to take what have been your own personal experiences coupled with those around you to be able to share some great insights. What has it been like to be able to get the feedback from what you've been sharing to all of us?
Well, about 8 years ago, I developed prostate cancer, and that was shortly after another illness I had forced me to quit teaching at the university. I was a full professor in speech-language pathology, and I was flailing around, really didn't know what I was going to do with my life, you know, because of the other illness, and then I developed prostate cancer with the undeterminate prognosis. And after laying in bed for 3 months, I was asked to meet someone, who had a partner who was at Laguna Honda, which was a large care facility for the indigent. And he had had a stroke, and that was the area of one of my areas of expertise, but he was also in the hospice unit. And I was reluctant to do that because of my own fears about dying. I went, and I was just taken back by what I experienced being in a ward of people who knew they were dying and being surrounded by friends and relatives. I decided then to become a hospice worker, and I did. And from the very first night that I was at the house where I – it was actually a hospice facility where I did my volunteering – I realized that I was going to be given a very special gift by the people who were dying. And I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know where it was going to take me, but I just felt I had an obligation to share that. So 2.5 years later, it came out as a memoir of my life as a hospice volunteer. And in the process of writing that book, and I still do hospice volunteering, I came to realize that it was only half of the story. I did get a lot of lessons from the people that I served, but I also noticed that certain things were important in how people died. And not only that, but it also did certain things to the people who cared for them and were left to grieve afterwards. Right. So I realized that it was all tied together. That learning lessons of how to die helped me in how I was going to live the rest of my life. But I also was taught by family caregivers about things that they could do that would not only help their loved ones die easier, but also reduce their own grief. And that became the origin of Leaning Into Sharp Points.
Yeah, and you know what, a question, I went back and listened to that first conversation with you, Stan, on the first book, And a question that came to my mind during the second book, I recognize that I didn't even ask you when we were talking about this topic in the first book, and that is how your own view of death has been refined. Because I have to believe, as I have now read two of your works, and knowing what you have had to go through and what you now have been around and the stories you have gleaned, that you yourself have to have had your own idea of death and your feelings about it evolved during that time. Would you say that's true, and how has that happened?
Well, you know, I think I was no different than most people are about how they look at death. You know, I think at you can think about something either at a theoretical level or at a more practical, pragmatic level. So my, you know, I didn't really fear about death because it wasn't close to me. Both of my parents, you know, had died quickly, and there was no lingering death. But, you know, when I received my diagnosis, it, you know, death became something very real. And and I found that it was very restrictive on how I, you know, interacted with people. I interacted differently. All the fears were there. And like most people, I had difficulty talking about it. But going into hospice, you know, a strange thing happens when people are getting closer to dying. And that's, they start, you know, it's almost like when I grew up back east, and when I would go out into the cold in January, my mother would layer me up with enough clothes so I wouldn't freeze. And it was necessary for when I was out of the cold. But when I came back in the house, she took each layer off because it was warm. And the same kind of process I've noticed happens with people who are dying. All of those ego-enhancing defense mechanisms that they've used their entire life are no longer necessary when they die, as you're getting closer.
Yeah.
And because you have that incredible honesty, you know, I was privileged to be around people who could talk about life in its most pure form. So it enabled me to get over the fear that I had about dying. I'm sure I'm still looking at it with some theoretical part of that. You know, it's easy to say, yes, I'm really not afraid of it because I know it's not going to happen that soon necessarily.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm going to be prepared because I've started to do a lot of those things that my patients showed me were important to do before you even get to that point.
For those that are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking with Dr. Stan Goldberg. He's the author of two books that I've had the pleasure of reading, Lessons for the Living, and now his new book, Leaning into Sharp Points, Practical Guidance and Nurturing Support for Caregivers. Now, the focus is on caregiving, as you just heard Stan talk about, and we were just mentioning, if you're just coming in, talking about death, and I had asked him about how his views of death and the way he looks at death have evolved. And you address this in the book in a very powerful way, Stan. I made a note on page 57, you wrote this: the future is always in a state of flux. What you may now believe to be unthinkable may be a necessity in the future, especially when it concerns the placement of a loved one. The earlier you prepare for the worst, the more comfortable you'll be if it happens, and the more delighted you'll be if it doesn't. And I think that goes to what you were saying about how you feel about death, not a fear, but more of an understanding. And I think that is what is really all throughout the book. There's another part of the book that really struck me, Stan, that I want to make sure I got in, because I have experienced this when people are in a time or in a place that seems foreign, when they seem out of control, a lot of times they will lash out. You talk about this in the book. In the heading of Resent the Illness and Not the Loved One, you give an example of a man whose daughter had pretty much given up her life to be there for him. He was going through dementia, and you know, he still called her names when she may have dropped something or lashed out at her that way, talking about she, you know, has never been anything. And you talked about how to deal with those words. And I have to admit to you, when I read that, I thought not of someone who is dying, but just of anybody who's dealing with those negative words coming their way, to be able to look past the words and to think about where it's coming from. Where is that anger coming from? Where is that meanness coming from? And trying to understand, even if you can't, of course, embrace it, but at least try to understand where this person is coming from. How important has that been for you and also those that you've shared this information with, Dan, to look past what is said and the real fact, and that is that this person is here, regardless of whatever you say about them, they're here and they're present with you?
I think that's critical. What I've experienced is that we all are a history of our experiences. What we say today is based on what we experienced yesterday and the day before that and the day before that. And I think the mistake that most people make is they think that the world that they see is the same world of the person they're talking with. And it's especially problematic when it's someone with an illness. People who are ill see their entire world through the eyes of that illness. I served a gentleman who was a corporate 500 executive who had been involved in directing the lives of many. And with his MLS, he couldn't even scratch himself when he needed to, and he had to rely on other people for that. Well, that's a radical transformation of his life. And it was difficult, even when he could speak, which was getting close to the end of that when I interacted with him. But even if he could speak, how do you go about explaining that, the life that you had is no longer there and you don't know how to deal with that? Well, his way was to get angry with his wife. And so we did have conversations about that. And I think one of the things I always try to emphasize when I'm working with caregivers is that, they need to understand that they live in a very different world from the world of the person they're serving. And
right.
If they're going to assume that their worlds are the same, you're going to constantly have conflict, and you're going to constantly be upset by what you perceive as someone not being appreciative of all that you have done. But if you say to yourself, okay, I know that I've given up so much for my husband, and I know that he knows that, so these angry words that he's using against me can't be about what I haven't done, and it can't be that he isn't appreciative. There's something else going on that he can't explain to me. And
right.
I think once we do that, once people start thinking in those terms, it's much easier to put aside those hurtful words and actions that we all experience as caregivers.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, too, Stan, to take it a step further, we all experience as human beings. I think we all have had those experiences where we have not been appreciated for what we try to bring to either the family, to a friendship, to a work environment. And I think that's what's so great about this book. It can be applied, even though it is directed towards caregiving. It really shows that all of us are here to serve, is what I got from it. All of us are here to serve, and we all have a role to play in every aspect of our lives, and it's up to us how we decide to do it. You gave another, and I mentioned, of course, being present, and I'm going to end the conversation with that, but you gave another great example that I made a note of, because our radio listeners here at 92.3 are listening to us out of the South Stand. I live myself personally in Mississippi, and you gave an instance in the book in talking about a gentleman named Clarence. Mm-hmm. And how those around him tried to be able to deal with him. And he had a sense of bigotry that even in dying did not seem to be letting up. And you said something interesting about that. And I took some time to actually think about not only what you said, but also what those around him decided to do. And that is to look for the human connection. Because I think outside of that human connection, everything else really doesn't matter. We have to be able to look. But it's not always easy to do that. How do you help people to appreciate that they have to be able to look beyond the surface sometimes to actually reach the person that's underneath?
Well, it was difficult. I think, you know, not only difficult for other people, but it was very difficult for me. I was a civil rights activist in the 60s. I was in Montgomery, Alabama, when Dr. King came there. You know, I was arrested, I was beaten, all of those things that you associate with someone who was involved in civil rights in the 60s, I was involved in. Now, you know, so we're jumping ahead now 40, 50 years, and I'm now a hospice volunteer. And I've made the commitment to myself that, you know, I'm serving the needs of those who are dying.
Right.
And I will try to be as compassionate as I possibly can towards them. And I always have the option of declining an assignment, you know, because of personal conflict difficulties, and I never do because I always view that as a place for me to learn. So I'm assigned to this gentleman who grew up in Alabama. He was in his 80s, I think, at that time. He only came out to California because this is where his daughter lived. He hated everything that I stood for my entire life. And now I knew I was expected to be compassionate towards him. And I knew, you know, I thought that wasn't going to be possible. You know, I couldn't be compassionate to this guy. But what I started to do is to start think about what my life would have been like if I grew up in rural Alabama in the 1930s, that had parents whose great-great-great-grandparents owned slaves, who've gone to a church their whole life, told him to hate blacks, Jews, Catholics, Northerners, almost anyone else that was different from them. What would I have turned into instead of who I became because I had parents who understood bigotry firsthand, growing up in Europe? Would I have been the same person I was? And I, you know, came to the realization I would not be the same person, and most likely, I would be no different than that mounted policeman in Montgomery who was trying to stop me. And I think it's that kind of understanding. It's not as good, I think, necessarily as being compassionate towards someone, but there are things that we just can't be compassionate about.
Right.
But we can have an understanding of what led that person to do that thing. And that's not an easy out for saying that an injustice wasn't done or the person's values, I think, are wrong. But it's understanding seems to be one level above anger and maybe one level below compassion.
I think that's a really good point. It's a really good point, and I think, again, something that we can all take away. Again, I'm speaking to Dr. Stan Goldberg. He's the author of the new book, Leaning Into Sharp Points, Practical Guidance and Nurturing Support for Caregivers. I've already posted my review of the book on Amazon.com, but Stan, let our listeners know how they can get their own copy and find out more information about you and your other work.
Well, both of the books, Leaning Into Sharp Points and Listening and Lessons for the Living, can be purchased from Amazon or any of the online booksellers. Also, a lot of the independent bookstores, who I try to support as much as possible, have copies available or can order copies. I don't sell any of the books myself, but on my website, which is Stan Goldberg Writer, WRITER.com, I have close to, I think, probably about 90 articles now that you know, they're free, and people can look over them, and they're relating to age, to issues of aging, end of life, grief, recovery, change, and illness.
Yeah. Well, it is always a pleasure, Stan, to speak with you and to read your work and your articles as well. I think what is so great about you is that you come from such a sincere place and a place of knowing, because you are actually you're living what you're talking to us about. You're living, being able to be there for individuals, to be present in circumstances, and to realize how quickly all of our lives can change and to build that appreciation for the life that we have. So we thank you so much for coming on. Stan Goldberg again, everyone, the new book, Leaning Into Sharp Points, Practical Guidance and Nurturing Support for Caregivers. And Stan, it goes without saying, you're more than welcome to come back anytime.
Thanks, Cyrus.
Hey, no problem. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we have our musical segment of the day, followed by our resident chef, Bruce Treader's quick and easy cooking tip. You're listening to Conversations Live on the radio at 92.3 FM, dcnowradio.com, as well as through blogtalkradio.com.